Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio. Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Friday, October the 8th, 2021. And Dr. Tim is participating and speaking at the Integrative Mental Health Summit today through Sunday. And I'll put the link to that in the notes. So his hour is going to be pre-recorded. And he titled it The Summary of This Work. So I hope you enjoy. And Michael and I'll be with you for the second hour.
All right. So I'll get a little intro going here, and you can just interrupt me if somebody raises a hand, because as you know, my preference is to take calls, and I try to approach these shows prepared to talk for the whole hour if I need to, but always hoping people will call in with comments or questions or testimonials of how this work is helping them. And this work specifically, for the recap, is the Ancient Aramaic Technology of Forgiveness. And forgiveness is this tool for reaching inside myself and removing anything that doesn't belong in me. And in order to remove what doesn't belong in me, I have to have a definition of what does belong in me and what doesn't. And the ancient Aramaic had the understanding that as human beings, we're meant to, because we are created from this energy of creation, some call it love, and because we were created by this energy of creation, some call it love, we're made of this stuff, some call love, and that's what we're meant to have as our conscious experience 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year round. And sometimes when we say that, people have an objection and they say, well, you're trying to tell me that my anger is a bad thing, or that I shouldn't have upset, or I shouldn't have fear, or I shouldn't have sadness or grief. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this system is this mind-body energy system, this creation device, is beyond my comprehension with my conscious logical mind. And it's a system that is so well designed and put together that everything that's in it is there for a reason. And if that's the case, it would be really important for me to know what's the reason for my having sadness, anger, fear, grief, hostility, confusion, tension. And one thing I'm offering is the purpose for those energies which feel discordant, tense, painful, disruptive, uncomfortable, whatever you want to call them, the purpose of it is to give me the feedback to tell me that my focus is inaccurate, that what I'm using to focus my conscious attention on is something that is creating discomfort, and that's not what I'm designed for. So it's like a feedback system to tell me, hey, Tim, your thoughts are off the mark. You're focusing on the wrong thing. You've chosen the wrong few bits of information from your senses. And back up, take a breath, center on your true nature as the energy of love, and then try again. Reassemble the input. Ask to be shown a higher level of integration of the information, or to choose different parts of the information that are hitting your senses, or what's getting resonated from your past, reevaluate it, dismantle what doesn't belong there, and return your focus to your true nature. That your conscious awareness should be on your true nature all the time, and that is this energy of creation, this energy of love, this energy of compassion. And when I do that, moment to moment, I create an experience of my true nature moment to moment, and then I'm creating an experience of love. I'm creating an experience of expansion, extension, acceptance, compassion, inclusion, union, and that's what the tool of forgiveness is all about. It helps me use the warning signals that appear in my awareness, and some would call them energies of pain or sadness or grief or loss or confusion or guilt or shame or anger, frustration. But if I use them as a guidance system, like a Geiger counter or a compass, to help me realize when my focus is off the mark, then I can also use that system in conjunction with a tool like the ancient Aramaic tool of forgiveness to remove from my energy system what doesn't belong there. And the more I clear out the stuff that doesn't belong there, the easier it is for me to experience and shift my focus to my true nature as this energy of love, and then extend that love to everyone and everything in every relationship in my life. And the more I do that, the easier it gets to do. It's amazing how well I've been conditioned by my culture to focus on those things which produce discomfort, anger and fear and tension, physical discomfort, negative emotional states, negative thought patterns. And I've been conditioned into that day after day, week after week for decades. And I was born into an energy system that inherited from both sides of my bloodline the same kinds of unproductive, tense, anger-filled, competition-filled patterns and belief systems. And I got it from both my mom's side and my dad's side that goes back infinitely. And then ever since I was born, I've been raised in a culture that's based on old false beliefs and competition and false separations, one person from another, one skin color from another, one geographic location from another, one political belief system from another, one religious belief system from another. And these false separations, these ideas and beliefs, have been used in the culture that I was born in and raised in for centuries to justify all manner of horrific abuses, from shunning to torture to death to wars to sarcasm to ridicule. False separations, false identifications, artificial, arbitrary lines of delineation based on a few tiny bits of information hitting our senses, and based on a history inherited from all kinds of people who were not living with a direct focus on their conscious nature, conscious awareness of their true nature as love. And I inherited that, and I lived in it for decades. So I've been trained and conditioned to believe I'm right, you're wrong, it's settled, why argue? And of course, when you happen to have a different opinion than mine, I've been trained to believe that if you're somebody that I want the approval of, I should give up my opinion and adopt yours. And if you're not somebody whose approval I want, I will argue with you. I will move to the level of actual antagonism, actual physical aggression to prove I'm right and you're wrong. And if that's been happening in my life on both of my parents' sides and all generations back for as long as time goes, and I inherited the energetic and genetic impressions of that, and then I had 35 or 40 years of conditioning in this culture into that belief system, I've got a lot of work to do to undo those conditioning patterns, to build a new habit. And the invitation of this work is to start anew. Please don't make a New Year's resolution. I really like the way Abraham Hicks says this. Last year, in January, she gave a talk and she said, don't make a New Year's resolution. This one's already come and already gone and you've already ruined it. Make a new moments resolution. Begin to train yourself to observe in the moment and question anew. Begin in each moment to return your focus to your breath, to shift the focus of your conscious awareness to your true nature. Begin a new moments resolution and pick up the tools. Pick the ones that fit you best and make a commitment to yourself, to your potential as a creator of a new, loving, positive, more expansive, joyful lifestyle, and apply your conscious awareness moment to moment to the application of tools that make your life better. And I'm happy if you're doing that with whatever tool suits you. The Sedona Release Method, Ho'oponopono, Byron Katie's work, the schools of religious science, the schools of Christian science, the schools of unity teachings, Martha Creek's work out of unity. Whichever set of tools resonates with you, pick it up, apply it, make a new moments resolution in each new moment to monitor your internal experience for an indication that your alarm is going off, that you're feeling anything less than love, that you're having any thoughts that are less than loving and inclusive, that you're doing anything other than identifying the true nature of creative force flowing through you and what it wants you to accomplish, that you keep your intention focused on the purity of that energy of creation, that you allow it to be there without resistance from you, that you surrender fully to that experience in the presence of each new moment, and that you remember with humility, and humility from the ancient Aramaic definition of the ability to identify the highest and best in everyone and everything you see, and then choose actively in the moment to cooperate only with that highest and best. Then you will resonate with the highest and best energies that it is potential for you to resonate with. You will extend those energies which are highest and best, and you will create in each new moment from your resolution to do so a better, more loving, more creative, more joyful, more expansive, more inclusive life experience in each moment. Now, in this work, the primary tool for that is called the Reality Management Worksheet, and that's available on the website that Dr. Michael Rice and Jeannie have tirelessly constructed with thousands of pages. And the website is www.whyagain.org. And there's a link on that page that looks like a red and white bullseye. And if you click on that link, it takes you to the page where this core tool, which is called the Reality Management Worksheet or Wake Up Sheet, the name keeps changing, but the process, the core process, is always the same. And it's free as a download. You don't even have to get on a mailing list. The vast majority and the core power tools that Michael and Jeannie have created, they're making available completely free of charge, without any strings attached. You click the link, you download the PDF file, you print it out as often as you want, and you've got access to one of the most powerful tools I have seen and experienced in my over 41 years of living life and doing therapy. Also on that link, you'll find a link to, again, completely free, you don't even have to add yourself to a mailing list, the 24.5-minute video of a PowerPoint presentation that explains the core of the process. The core of the process, which took Dr. Michael Rice 35 years to try and to really understand, even though he taught it and he saw it work and he saw people have great results with it, it took him about 35 years to really begin to understand the core. And the core mechanism of this process is to understand that the reality that I'm experiencing in each moment is generated by my mind. It's got nothing to do with what's going on outside of me. And it's generated in my mind, driven by the goals I hold in each moment. And when I hold a goal, it literally recruits data from my past experiences and my energetic patterns, and it uses my past and the information stored in my brain and body's energy system to create a picture in my mind that I then hallucinate and believe is what's going on outside of me. And so if I understand the alarm system and I realize when I'm feeling any kind of discomfort physically, mentally, or emotionally, that means I have done something off the mark. I've shifted my focus away from my true energy as a nature of love. Then, now with the concept of identifying a goal is what drives that creation in my mind that I'm calling reality, that's driven by my perception, I can then go in and cancel whatever goal I'm holding. And I can get access to a higher faculty of experience, of wisdom, of energetic connectedness by simply asking to be shown how I'm actually creating my own pain. And when I cancel the goal, it literally collapses the picture in my mind that I have identified with, that I've been holding on to, that I have been certain is what tells me that I'm right and the world is wrong and that I shouldn't have to be feeling this. I can cancel that whole perceptual process by simply canceling my goals in the moment and asking to be shown from something far greater and more powerful and expansive than my conscious logical mind, where's the true source of my discomfort? And when that happens, and I ask to be shown, and I ask to love truth, truth meaning the actuality of what's happening in the moment, powerful changes happen in my life. That's the core of this work. A beautiful PowerPoint presentation outlining it is available for free. The worksheet process itself is available for free. And a whole host of other worksheets and tools that are available for free at www.whyagain.org. So I'll take a breath and I'll ask Michelle if we have anybody in the chat room, if we have anybody with their hand up on the phone queue, or if you have any thoughts about what I've said so far.
Kind of quiet on the switchboard today in the chat room. The one thing I really have to agree with everything that you said is the part about that it gets easier and easier. It's surprising to me how my own resistance systematically, sorry, I'm getting a call. I'm trying to figure it. Excuse me. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought because I was getting a call, and so I was talking about the process of forgiveness and letting
you were
go,
saying it gets easier and easier.
Easier, and that has been kind of a delightful surprise because the level of resistance maybe at the beginning when you're coming into the sticker issues is very palpable for me and a real force to reckon with, so to speak. And so then, you know, a couple years later, and then it's with a lot more ease. And I didn't expect that because of how hard, difficult, how challenging it was for me to let go, let's say, at the beginning, concepts about needing to be right, you know, voracious appetite for needing to be right. And, like, how that was so integrated and identified so strongly. And, I mean, I can't, I don't recognize that I'm not that person anymore. Not that it's completely healed. There's fringes. It's just that my ability to transcend them is becoming easier. And it's like a nice surprise, like bonus. You don't have to always be so arduous.
Yeah, it really, I have noticed the same thing for myself, that year after year, the ease has been sneaking up on me. And at the same time, there's a course, a lesson in the Way of Mastery. In the fifth lesson, it talks about the keys to the kingdom, and it says, the keys to the kingdom are desire, intention, allowance, surrender, and humility. And the reason for the need for humility is because the further one goes in the process of removing what's less than love, the more powerfully the person's life changes for the better. And the greater the temptation for the individual to say, oh, look what I did. Look what a fine boy am I. And that is the other side of the coin for how it gets easier and easier to face my own resistance and to surrender into the process and pick up the tools and move through my own painful energies or false beliefs, I can move through them far more quickly than I did 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. I can also be pulled up very, very abruptly and short because the things I'm likely to run into at the next level are things that I have hidden from myself so successfully and with such an intense conviction that this is too powerful, too negative, too upsetting, too grief-stricken, too rageful for me to deal with. So I will get far more intense negative responses when I hit a new layer, perhaps even more intense than when I first began or in my first few years in this work. What I have noticed, however, is that the duration of the discomfort is getting shorter and shorter. So if I keep my willingness focused and I'm willing to go through the more intense, the more uncomfortable, the more painful, the more confusing layers, they pass more quickly.
You know, that's interesting. Disclosure, Tim, because I haven't really heard anybody mention that concept before, and trying to put it through my own experience to see if that feels right. But it's interesting. What would you think the correlation is why the intensity be more? Because you're cleared the thinner layers, and so you're getting to the...
Well, my understanding of it is that it's all directly related to my willingness to go through it. And the things that will pop up when I first say, hey, I want to be enlightened. I want to be a better person. I want to go follow some spiritual teachings. I want to sign up for this wisdom school. So the things that I'm going to be willing to see at that first level are still tied to my ego's identification with wanting to be seen as a good person or as a spiritual seeker. And so I'm really, at that level, not as willing as my conscious mind wants me to believe. It's still mostly tied to an ego identification. And so I'll be able to look at, oh, yeah, I was kind of mean to my brother when I was growing up. I should go through those layers. Oh, yeah, you know, sometimes I'm not completely honest about, you know, my financial dealings or whatever it is that was my issue. And because I'm new to it, I think I'm willing at a far deeper level than my willingness actually goes, because I don't understand the process. And the further I go into the process, the more I peel back the layers and the more I realize, oh my gosh, you know, I have hidden a lot more stuff from myself than I ever imagined I had hidden from myself. I have literally convinced myself that I can't survive looking at this piece of knowledge about myself or this false belief about myself or this old memory about myself. Wow, I didn't even realize that. So as I go deeper, I'm going to run into things that have been there longer and that got put in there with a stronger conclusion on my part that I could not survive if they came to the surface. So that's my understanding of why when I do have a new layer come up, sometimes it's just mind-boggling to my conscious mind how intense it is when I've had thoughts about, oh, yeah, I've handled my anger issue in that area, or, oh, yeah, I've handled my guilt issue in that area. And then if I let myself go down that path of thinking I've done this work or I've finished with that issue, I've literally just put a set of blinders on myself. And then I just go charging off into the world with blinders off, and I get shocked by the fact that I just ran into a tree stump. So my challenge is to stay constantly with the resolution in each new moment to be open to watch whatever errors, whatever alarm systems go off, and just stay with the program that says, okay, if I'm in pain, I'm in error. And that's, you know, one of my favorite lines from one of the early worksheets was just that, quote, if I'm in pain, I'm in error. My thinking is off the mark. Another one of my favorite lines from a previous worksheet is, the truth is, my reality is strictly internal, it's unique to me, and is created out of my own thoughts. And if you think about it, that means I'm a very powerful creator, because in each moment, I create my experience of life by the thoughts I choose. Because the statement was, the truth is, my reality is strictly internal, it's unique to me, and is created out of my own thoughts. If I can stay focused on that in the moment and just be alerted to the fact that any discomfort, physical, mental, or emotional, is my alarm system provided by the Creator for my benefit to let me know when I'm in error, then I don't have the trap of thinking, oh, I'm done with that. Oh, I've already cleared these issues, so it must be his problem right now. Does that make sense?
No, it all makes real sense. I actually want to go back to the laundry list that you provided, and I didn't catch who you said it was. Humility was the end of it. There were
so the
other
five keys to the kingdom. So the five keys
to
the kingdom from the Way of Mastery, lesson five. And the first is desire. And in lesson four in Way of Mastery, the entire lesson is about the energy of desire. And I'll wrap it up this way. You know, we have a lot of confusion that we create and perpetuate by the use of language and words. And there's a lot of individual meaning that each of us has loaded for a word like desire. So in the fourth lesson, Way of Mastery goes into great detail trying to describe the energy of desire. And one little story is that, so here's the Creator. And the Creator creates these beautiful little flowers and provides the energy of creation, like the nectar of life that these flowers can suck up from their roots and use to create buds and flowers and beautiful arrangements of creation. And the Creator gave those flowers free will. And the Creator steps back and watches and says, isn't this odd? Some of these flowers I've created, just as this nectar of life and energy comes into their roots and starts to ascend, they tie their stem in knots. So that energy can't express. So the energy of desire is simply the energy of creation that wants to express through each of us individually and differently. This is completely different than the energy of wanting or craving or obsession. It's a very powerful but very subtle energy that most of us have been conditioned out of paying attention to. So the entire lesson four is some exercises and some talk about how to just slow down and sit back and observe the energy of desire trying to express through us, and know we don't have to act on it, and get better and better at tuning our awareness to this very subtle and powerful energy, and that's desire. Lesson five talks about the five keys to the kingdom. Desire is the first, intention is the second, allowance, surrender, and humility. So desire we've talked about. I get tuned into what uniquely wants to express through me as this energy of creation. And I practice letting go of the judgments. Oh, I shouldn't want money because I'm a spiritual person. Oh, I shouldn't want to eat ice cream because I'm supposed to be a healthy spiritual person. Oh, I shouldn't want sex because spiritual people don't really care about the physical. And just put all of those judgments away and tune into and make a practice of tuning into this energy that's trying to flow through us. With the understanding that we have the spiritual faculty of choice and that we can choose from a place of balance in alignment with other values and priorities what we act on. And so this helps us move into a very productive alignment. The second, so there's desire, then there's intention, and intention has to do with reminding myself in the presence moment that my intention is to be of service to this energy of creation, that my intention is to be aligned with the desire of the Creator trying to express through me. The next faculty is allowance. And this has to do with recognizing that whatever is happening for me, not to me. And that when I have a resistance to something that appears in my life, I'm if I go with the resistance as anything other than my alarm system to refocus on my true nature as love, if I use the resistance from an ego perspective to decide I'm right and you're wrong, I'm removing myself from the stream of life in the moment and the flow of creation. So allowance has me being the leaf on the surface of the water being swept downstream in the flow of the creative energy. I get up in the morning and I have some plans to have a beautiful day out in the sun and a picnic and all kinds of friends invited, and it's raining. And rather than having even a moment's resistance, I allow, and I look at the rain, I allow this day to be rainy. I allow this day to progress in an entirely different fashion than what I had planned. So there's desire, tapping into the energy that wants to express, the creative energy that wants to express uniquely through me, intention in the moment, in the presence moment, reminding myself that I want to be aligned with the intention of all creation in harmony, in extension of love and beauty. And then I want to be an allowance. I want to be in that state of allowing however the day unfolds and use it, allow myself to be used in each of those moments to express that creative energy flow with the intention of being in the flow of creation and allowing whatever happens and releasing my resistance in each moment. And then I want to surrender. I want to surrender to all of it that can come, all of life that can benefit from my extension of love in each moment, all that I can learn by surrendering to be taught by the power of the moment, by the other creative beings around me, by the flow of creative energy in my world that I have drawn to me to reveal to me that which is less than love within me so that I can dismantle it and release it. Surrendering in each moment. And a lot of times Dr. Michael Rice talks about this too. He says, you know, people don't want to hear about surrender. We're raised in a culture that's focused on domination and competition and being the best and overpowering things. And people really get all bent out of shape when they hear the word surrender and understand it at these deeper and deeper levels, that it's really a powerful, powerful process. And what most people don't understand is that they are always surrendering to one thing or another. In the world of competition and dominance, I'm always either surrendering to anger or fear, or I'm surrendering to love. And in this work, the invitation is to learn to surrender to the flow of life, which comes from that energy of creation, which some would call love, to be focused on how it wants to express through me as an energy of desire, to hold the intention to stay aligned with the true energy of creative force, which always speaks about inclusion and acceptance and joy, extension and creativity in a loving energy, to allow that to happen and unfold as it does, to surrender to the process fully, to surrender to love in each moment, choose to surrender to love rather than surrender, to be driven by the alarm system, which is there only to tell me, hey, you know, you're not in alignment with love in this moment. And then as one does that, one discovers fabulous transformations in their experience of life moment to moment, because one begins to build the habit of staying focused with their conscious awareness on their true nature as the energy of love, and then their experience of life in each moment becomes the extension of that love. It becomes loving, joyful, passionate, compassionate, inclusive, creative. And in that moment, I have transformed my experience of life. And as I do that, things get so much better that it literally puts me in a different world of experience. And that's where humility needs to be, again, a presence moment commitment, a present, a new moment resolution, to stay connected to the fact that, you know what? I didn't create myself. I don't even know when I was created. I don't know how to digest the food I had for breakfast. So this isn't me doing all of this. This is me letting the energy of desire flow through me, holding the intention of being aligned with the desire from a higher level of being, and that level of energy that keeps the stars in alignment and the planets spinning, allowing whatever happens and allowing myself to understand that it must be happening for me and not punitively to me. Surrendering in that moment to the energy of creation rather than resistance, and then understanding I didn't do this. Even the master teacher that some call Jesus, and we know from the ancient Aramaic his name was something more like Yeshua or Yeshua, that his core teachings were, I myself do nothing, and yet the Father within me does all these things. Even at the pinnacle of manifesting creatively, positively, true masters understand that their being a master has nothing to do with control of anything other than they've mastered their ability to be a perpetually avid student. And in this context, what am I being a student of? I am a student of the energy of creation, the energy of love, and I allow it to teach me, and I surrender to it in each moment. And I hold the power of humility, which is that ability to identify with the highest and best, with everyone and everything around me, and then choosing to cooperate only with that. Taking a breath. Did I stay on target or go way off on tangent?
I think you're doing a wonderful job, so much so that people prefer to listen than calling with questions. It's a great message, and just, for me it resonates just a lot of positive, good feelings when I can remember to reconnect with that when you're saying it and kind of imagining it and, you know, instantly feel a higher level of vitality, more energy just sitting here. So I'm sure other people are similarly inspired. It's an inspiring message.
Well, I bring in things like Way of Mastery and Guy Finley to this work on this show because to my ear and my eye, it's the same message. And when I have an experience in my mind-body energy system that's anything other than that energy of love, I want to pick up a reality management worksheet. I want to take a breath. I want to do like the Beatitudes say in the first few Beatitudes. You know, these aren't religious prescriptions for following some law of man or some religious ritual. This is what some would call a yogic practice. So instead of blessed are the poor in spirit, which is the first beatitude, something like that from the King James, the ancient Aramaic scholars have gone back to the original and found out that what was interpreted as the word poor is not poor as in having nothing, but as in being open. And another meaning for that word that was translated by the Greeks as the word poor is it's just one tiny little mark, one little dash on the paper turns the word that the Greeks interpreted as poor to the word home. And so if you're listening to someone who's supposed to be an earth-shattering spiritual teacher, And then someone down the road says, oh, did you hear what that spiritual teacher said? Blessed are those who are poor in their spirit. And somebody else says, wait a minute, I was there at the same talk. I know his native language. And I believe what he said was, now is the ripe time. Ripe is in the ripeness of a fruit at the perfect moment. Right now is the perfect moment to make your home in the breathing unity, to breathe, to bring yourself into the breath. Have your home in your spirit world, in your home, in your connection, the intimate connection between the physical and the spiritual energy system. Now is the ripe time to make your home in the breathing unity and let the fertile soil of the queendom birth your clear guidance. And somebody else was at the same talk and they said, no, not only do I speak his native language, I'm from his hometown. And I really think all he said was, listen, whenever you feel anything that you don't like, breathe, make your home in the breath, feel it fully, keep breathing, and then let it flow through you. That's all he said in the first three Beatitudes. Breathe, feel it, and let it go. It makes more sense to me that a spiritual teacher would say, make your home in your spirit. Make your home in the breath, which connects the energy of creation to this physical body. This energy flow, without which there is no animation of that thing you're calling a physical energy system. Focus on that. Let that reconnect you to what your true nature is. Let that remind you that you don't have any idea how your breath keeps moving when you're not thinking about it or when you're asleep at night and your heart keeps pumping and your food digests. You don't have any idea how you make the body move across the room when you decide to get up and go to the refrigerator. There is something in each of us that is living through us. There is something in each of us which is looking out through us. There is something within each of us that is breathing us, living us, breathing us. And Dale Allen Hoffman likes to quote St. Francis of Assisi who said, what you are looking for when you go on a spiritual quest, when you say you want to find God, what you are looking for is what's doing the looking through you. It is the energy of creation that's trying to express through you in each moment, that keeps your heart pumping, that keeps your food digesting, that motivates your nerve system and your muscles to help you navigate your body through the physical realm. And that reminds me of this one quote that Michael Rice likes to bring up. He says, you know, there's a biblical quote that says, the eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep shall your darkness become? And he says, you know, if you look at that in the English language as it came through the Greek translations from an ancient Aramaic speaker, it's really boggling. What is that talking about? The eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep shall your darkness become? But if you have the ancient Aramaic translations and an understanding of the idioms, Michael Rice says, here's a better way to understand what was being said there. Your perceptual mind is your light for this earthly life. It's the thing that's supposed to help you walk through life without bumping into trees or open manholes. Your perception is simply meant to help you navigate through the physical realm. And within that light of perception, you know, there's a site on a CIA website that says their research indicates very, very clearly that our perception does not record reality. We've been taught to believe that if I open my eyes and look out the window, I'm simply going to see what's there. But numerous studies have demonstrated, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that my perception does not record reality. My perception constructs reality. And it's constructed based on goals and conclusions that I hold in my mind and based on my past experiences, which feed those goals and conclusions. So here's some kind of a translated quote that comes down and says, "The eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become?" Well, here's ancient Aramaic wisdom. If you go back to the original translation, and it says something more like, your perceptual mind is the light for your earthly life. It's here to help you navigate through the physical realm safely. And if your light in that perceptual realm is darkness, in the ancient Aramaic, that meant any form of hostility or fear. If you're feeling hostility or fear, you're not perceiving accurately. Your lights are out. It's as bad as wearing blinders. You're going to create more problems for yourself. You're going to think your internal discomfort, your alarm system telling you you're off the mark, is caused by someone or something outside of you. Then you're going to go chasing after someone or something outside of you to get them, it, he, she, to change so that you don't have to feel your alarm system going off. And that's an endless wild goose chase. There will never, ever be any satisfaction achieved in the world by me getting someone else to change so that I don't have to feel my alarm system going off. So your perceptual mind is the light for your earthly life. And if you're feeling hostility or fear, your lights are out, you're going to have a distorted perception. This is your alarm system telling you, Tim, you've recruited from your past painful memories, false beliefs, traumatic energies, and you're constructing a reality, an internal picture in your mind about the world and the people around you that is not accurate. Tim, stop. You're about to step into an open manhole. Tim, if you're driving a car, pull over, take a few deep breaths, make your home in the breathing unity. Breathe, feel it, and let it go. Restore your conscious focus of awareness to your true nature as the energy of love. The lights will come back on. You will see your life more accurately, and then in that moment you can extend. You can choose to extend your true nature as the energy of love and creation to everyone and everything around you. And it's guaranteed, Tim, this is coming from your Creator. It's guaranteed to work out better for you than when you act from hostility or fear. This brings to mind, Guy Finley says, you know, the Creator didn't just put you in a world with a teacher. The Creator puts you in a world where your constant relationship to the laws, to the energies that can teach you about yourself, your true nature, and love in each moment will never abandon you if you simply ask to be taught. You're not just in the world with a teacher. You're in life, in each present moment, with an infinite relationship with that which can teach you about yourself and the true nature of the world around you if you simply ask it to. And if I can become conscious and present in each moment to my internal alarm system, more and more each day, I'm still working at peeling off the layers of decades of conditioning in my own current lifetime. But if I can practice this present moment resolution, this new moment's resolution, to be aware of the alarm system sounding within me, tension, fear, confusion, shame, guilt, upset, grief, pain, rage, frustration, and use that to take a breath, to center, to release what's less than loving in me, to focus my conscious awareness on my true nature as love, the lights come back on, I get a more accurate picture of what actually is happening in the world around me, and these other beings of light and love that are with me, to quote something I wrote earlier in a blog post last week or the week before, there are no idiots in this world. There are only beings of light and brilliance who have either temporarily forgotten or have yet to discover their brilliance. Yes, every one of us has done something that we've later gone back and looked at and said, well, that was idiotic. And yet that does not define us. That is not our true nature. So there are no idiots. There are only beings of light and brilliance who have either temporarily forgotten or have yet to discover their brilliance. And if I feel something in my alarm system going off, any negative thought or emotion or physical ache or pain, and I stop, I breathe, I make my home, my conscious awareness focus on my true nature as energy of love, the lights come back on. And when the lights come back on, I am allowed in that moment accurate perception about the true nature of the beings of light and brilliance all around me and how everything that's happening in my life is happening for me to help me reveal to myself what I've been hiding from myself that's less than love, what I have been identified with that is less than the energy of creation, so that I might release that and choose again in each new moment to keep my focus on extending my true nature as the energy of love. I trust, Michelle, that if a hand had gone up, you would have interrupted, and so I will ask briefly here in the last few minutes for questions or comments from you.
I would have told you if there was a hand up. I think people are really enjoying it, and actually I have a way of mastery somewhere. I'm going to go find it and read that lesson. It's intriguing. So thank you for your comments and introducing other, Bethany and Way of Mastery. I think you're right. There are different paths to the same summit.
Yeah, we've talked at length at different times about how the truth is just the truth. And what's actually true is true no matter which words you're using to describe it. We have times when people get, and I mentioned it last week, we had a support group again last night and one a week ago. And a week ago the discussion was all about a word and a definition for a word and how everybody was having slightly different meanings for the word. And so it ended up with people debating, well, what does that really mean and what does this really mean? So if you get past that, if you look at the actual experience of life, it works the same way for all of us. And so each of the wisdom schools has something to offer, and each of us from our history are going to be able to understand or resonate better with one school than another. And so pursue what soothes you, what nurtures you, what helps you tune into your true nature. And in the meantime, come on back tomorrow and the rest of the week and have the best year yet of your eternal life. We appreciate everybody who's been here today.
That was awesome. That was a pre-recording from actually back in 2015. Dr. Tim is with the Integrative Mental Health Summit today and tomorrow and Sunday. So hold the space. All that goes perfectly well. So we welcome you to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, October the 8th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. And welcome, everyone. We are honored and delighted that you are with us today and that we get to have another conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness. This radio show conversation has been going on for 10 years, and the forgiveness conversation for me has been going on for 40 years. You'd think it would get old, but you know something? God, it gets more profound, more powerful, more meaningful, more significant every day, every time I have a conversation about it. And, you know, you think, well, Michael, you must be a really slow learner if you don't know it all already. And you know what? I'm really clear. I don't know it all already. Still learning, still opening, still seeing different parts of this process and the function of this thing we call our minds that really isn't a mind at all. It's just a carbon-based memory function. In fact, if you go back into the Aramaic, you'll remember there are two minds that are spoken of in those ancient scriptures. There's Adam's mind, and they say of Adam that, you know, he fell into a deep sleep. It doesn't say anything about him waking up. And then there's this new thing that comes in. And let's take it out of the religious realm and just look at it from a practical point of view. There's this new thing that comes in that was called the mind of Christ, spoken of often. And, you know, we have that mind, which I would offer each and every one of us has as our birthright to think with that mind, which is literally the mind of the Creator. It is the mind of love. Love is the Creator. We can stop trying to figure out what it means, go to the experience of love, and then stop, because everything your mind's going to tell you is going to be a lie, because there's something that goes against that mind of love in you, that mind of Christ, and it was called what? Obviously, the Antichrist. And you remember that the Antichrist had a number, and the number was 666. It's interesting. You know, If you, let's say you had 100 people in the room and brought somebody in the room to do something that virtually everybody in the room would consider really terrible. So this person comes up to the front of the room and does whatever it is that they do. And one person is mortified, horrified. One person's enraged. One person's grieved. One person's screaming, running out of the room. And, you know, if the cause of any of what happened in each of those minds was the same, then what happens in each of those minds would be the same. But obviously it's not. So obviously each of the 100 minds in the room that does whatever it does around that behavior has its own construct based in that behavior. You know, somebody might be ready to condemn that person to hell. Somebody might be ready to send them to jail. Somebody might be ready to pray for them. Somebody else, you know, everybody's going to have a different reality around the actuality of the moment. Where is the reality stored that comes up in each mind, but obviously in each mind's so-called body? If we talk to a modern-day physicist, and we had them do some investigation. Let's say we cooked down a human body to the basic elements. The most common base element in that so-called body is going to be carbon. And the atomic number of carbon is 6. There are 6 electrons, 6 protons, 6 neutrons. Are the energetic patterns that come forward and replace the mind of love in you stored in that 666 carbon-based memory system? That's my offering. So there's a signal that will tell you when that 666 mind is active in you. That is, interjected into the situation will be some form of hostility or fear. If there is hostility or fear injected into the perceptual construct of the moment, know that your mind, that what that means is that your mind is using corrupt data to produce its perceptual construct. And that means that everything that the mind of hostility or fear is telling you about any given situation is a fraud and a lie. Carbon-based memory is a liar. This is the father of liars. There is no truth in it. No truth. When carbon-based memory replicate something from the past, when it plays out its content again and again and again and again, and it presents you with what you think is a present moment experience, but this present moment experience, you say to yourself, why is this happening to me again? Or why are they doing this to me again? And then when you really get down to it, you'll see that the again part is coming from carbon-based memory. It's a perceptual construct that says, here it is again. And so we have, fortunately, from the ancient Aramaic, a tool, a scholar's tool for collapsing what carbon-based memory feeds to us as the truth of the moment. We have the power to bring the mind of love into the presence of that anti-Christ mind or that anti-love mind. And when we hold to that active presence of love, that's when the carbon-based memory system starts to have its corrupt data removed. And the removal of that corrupt data is forgiveness. Now, the Greeks turned it around into, you did something terrible. The reason my perceptual construct is loaded with so much pain is because of what you did. But it's okay. The Greeks told me that I should forgive you. I should let you off the hook for the fact that my carbon-based memory is so full of pain and trauma and terror and turmoil and hatred and vengeance that I'll let you off the hook because it's there. And when you realize how silly that is, how ridiculous that is, and that that has nothing to do with forgiveness. It's a Greek act of pardoning. Yes, let somebody else off the hook for what's going on inside of you. They did a behavior that's off the wall. Great, pardon them. But if you call letting them off the hook forgiveness, then you'll never step forward. You'll never step in and do your forgiveness work. So forgiveness is the tool with which you collapse pained perception into its root content, and you bring that root content forward in the presence of love and heal. So if you let somebody else off the hook, and because you let somebody else off the hook, your mind quiets down and goes, okay, I can pretend I don't have this rage or fear or hatred or vengeance anymore until the next time somebody does something. And life has a purpose. Life abhors you being diseased. Hate, fear, rage, guilt, grief, all that stuff is disease, energy. Life doesn't like you having it. So it appears that the system has been set up so that if you hold any of those energies, somebody's going to come to visit. And it's going to be the person who's in tune with or in resonance with those energies. If each person lives in denial, look what you did to me, then the denial is going to cause dissociation from the very thing that I most need to embrace, that I most need to hold to, that I most need to work through. And then once I've dissociated from that, of course, I'm going to use that data to build my brain's image of everybody else. They're going to show up in my mind with my problem attached and swear it must be their problem. The objective here, if you want to pardon somebody, great, pardon them, but then go in and clean up the root content in carbon-based memory. And it might be, you know, right down into your very genes that content needs to be cleaned out. So when you can hold to active present love and let that crazy content move, that's when dissolution occurs. And that's what the forgiveness worksheet is about, the reality management sheet. So if you're not using the worksheets, I'm going to suggest that you go to our website, whyagain.org. That's the word Y, W-H-Y, and then the word again, .org. And in the upper left-hand corner, there's a link that says start here. Put the pen to the paper, follow those links, and watch what happens to the content of your mind. Forgiveness is the tool with which you remove the very capacity to hold pain within your structure. You remove that energetic pattern. You can do the worksheet right there live on the website. You can download and print the worksheets, and there's several different versions. Each of them has different features, and there's a 7-step that is the latest one that we use on a regular basis. We want you to take it and go to work with it. You can also go to your app store on your phone, whichever system you've got, the Android or the iPhone. Type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, that's all one word, Heartland. Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, Forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. And you can step right into that app, total complete privacy, and do your forgiveness work right there. It's awesome. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Jeannie. And so I'm going to head into the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We're in the chapter on clarifying love. We'll do a couple of paragraphs. We're on page 126 for anybody that wants to follow along. If you don't have a book to follow along with, it's out of print, but you can go to Amazon or eBay and pick up a copy pretty cheaply, or you can go to our website and download the book free. So we've been talking to this character, Richard, about what love is, inviting him to realize who he is as love, and then to have the patience and stick around long enough. This is one of the challenges with the work, is growing long enough. They go, oh, I understand it now. And it's like, no, this isn't about understanding. This is about doing your work. So building the brain cells. And as you build the brain cells, deeper and deeper meanings will come to your mind about how this all works. And, you know, the last paragraph I read yesterday was from, again, page 126. An unwillingness to look deeper means that old patterns will tend to be passed on and played out by the next generation. Conscious, active, present love is the key to healing whatever needs to be healed. So we're offering that when you put the pen to the paper, you begin to remove content and deeper levels of clarity will come to your mind. So Richard asks the question, what's the best tool for really truly getting to the space of love within relationships with children, spouses, or myself even, and healing those generational patterns? And before we answer that question, let's just recognize that when you set a goal is a frequency. It is an energetic pattern that through resonance will pull everything in your field related to that goal into activity. And if there's hostility or fear that is pulled into activity, then your perception is going to be distorted. Is that the goal? You know, there's some Harvard research that tells us that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. It's been estimated that in that same time frame, there are approximately 20 trillion bits potentially available. So when you think about it, if we live in a 20 trillion bit world, our goal causes 10,000 measurable units of electricity to happen in the brain. 10,000 brain cells are firing. And the mind reduces that. It's kind of like a reducing valve to a sum total of a max of 9 bits of data. Now, when you realize that something is going to determine which 9 bits of data are going to be used to build our perception, the genius piece of work from Yeshua 2,000 years ago to recognize that it was goals. You'll notice that, you know, you're usually, unless you're just a really, truly, generally miserable person, you're pretty happy with most everybody when they're doing what it is that you want them to do. Notice the only time you're upset, quote unquote, at them, you pretend it's at them, is when they violate a goal that you hold for them. And that goal resonates everything right down into your genetic history, energetic patterns, unresolved or resolved, skills or lack thereof, are all pulled into activity, and the mind ferrets that whole energetic process out and shows you a picture made of 9 bits of data, a construct that is totally and completely false and non-existent in the world. If we listen to Einstein, he says, on such things as matter, we've been all wrong. What we've heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. So notice that you look out into a world of matter. You look out and you see a world of bodies. At least you think you're looking out. And it's a lie. You're not. You've never seen anything through your body's eyes. You can't. The eye is a one-way valve. Information comes in. You can't look out through it any more than you can pull the wires off the back of your TV antenna and look up the wires and see out through the antenna on the roof. You can't see through your eyes. Your brain generates this world that you see according to the content of your mind and the goals that you hold. And so you're going along and life is pretty good. You've been doing your work. You say, hey, I'm doing pretty well. And all of a sudden this big explosion of insanity happens inside. You go, what the heck happened here? I thought I was getting somewhere. Well, probably the big explosion of insanity is showing you that you are getting somewhere because you're developing the strength and the ability to go to new levels of doing your work. So when you go to those new levels, you get to look at things you haven't looked at before. And so you may literally pull something up from 10 generations ago, some horrendous experience that happened, and why am I in such turmoil and conflict and pain and, you know, what's going on? Well, I just pulled that data into expression, and my mind is going to make a picture up out of that data. If the picture is of you, then I'm going to be sure that you caused me to feel this. But the simple fact is you can't feel anybody else's. The reason you're feeling this is because it's in you. If you don't like it, then you need to collapse your perceptual construct into the root of what your mind is pained about. And when you do, and you bring it forward in the presence of love, then you get to start to look at what's under the surface. And when that which is under the surface comes forward and is exposed to love, it begins to dissolve. And that dissolution is what we call forgiveness. So Richard says, how do we do this? When someone triggers a healing opportunity, and if you're in pain, you can do one of two things. You can play the denial game. Look what you did to me. You hurt me. You caused my pain. Or you can go, oh, I've been through this pain 87 different times, 42 different people. This must be about me. What's the goal I'm holding for this person I want to blame? I'm going to cancel that goal. I'm going to collapse that perception. When it collapses in on itself, I'm going to get to look at what's underneath it. I'm going to get to look at the root of it. And I may literally have perceptions that come from that person 10 generations ago that went through such trauma. I may literally get to experience that. But as I apply forgiveness, I remove that from my structure, from my genes, from my generations. So each time someone can resonate something based in hostility or fear in you, and it takes great learning to get to the point where you go, oh, this is my opportunity. So when someone triggers a healing opportunity, the first thing to do is to choose to be responsible for your mind's output. Forgive and learn to hold the condition of love in your mind in all circumstances, regardless of what your mind prompts you to do. Now, there are all kinds of feelings stored in there, unresolved, generations and generations of, I don't care who you are, rage and fear and sadness and grief and hatred and vengeance and, generations of that stuff. And out of those generational patterns, you are going to feel like doing a certain behavior. But if you're going to recoup from these generational patterns, you've got to stop doing what you feel like doing and do what you've committed to do. If you've committed to live as love, as a human being, and rage comes up and you want to rage at somebody, you need to forgive your rage before you do another thing so you can keep your commitment to function as love. Pretty obvious thing, I think. We call the kind of love that we're talking about here all-encompassing love. The tool, My Commitment from the Healing Through Relationships workshop, was developed to assist in creating that space of love. It's a powerful key to staying on track and keeping love in your mind when you feel turmoil. It's the best reminder I have found to get me back to a loving space when upset surfaces, at least daily, to your closest relationships, and say it aloud to yourself while looking in the mirror. Now, each of us has a personal code, a personal set of rules that our mind forces us to follow. It doesn't matter what we choose to do. We can say, oh man, if anybody ever does that terrible behavior again, instead of raging at them, I'm going to be loving, gentle, and respectful. And you made that commitment to them, and you were right until the next time they gave you the look. And then what happened to your resolve to be loving, gentle, and respectful? Your personal code took over. If rage was at the root of it, then you raged again and again and again and again. And you will get to forgive again and again and again and again as you shave off the emotionally impacted energy that's locked into your personal code that forces you to do behaviors against your own will and choice. So what I'm proposing here with this commitment is that this is a personal code that you want to teach to your carbon-based memory mind. All kinds of rules in your mind about doing something else. We're going to suggest that you consider adopting this as a personal code, and then practice with it until it becomes first nature to do it. So I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. I will do this in my thoughts, words, and actions, whether in your presence or not. In every interaction, I will look for and acknowledge the highest and best in you as I surrender to love, our true nature. My connection to my source and nurturing my relationship with you are always more important than any issue. If anything unlike love comes up, I will hold this in my heart and listen as I learn to speak, experience, and be responsible for my own realities. I'm here, for and with you. I will keep communication open and keep love conscious, active, and present as we heal together and celebrate life. So there's a suggested personal code. And, if you look at that, everything that we all do is autobiographical. So you just look through that and you can see the issues that I've faced in my life and my world as I developed that personal code. When I originally taught the workshop that today we call Healing Through Relationships, it was called Healing Your Relationships because I thought there was such a thing as a diseased relationship. and you need to heal it. But there's no such thing as healing a relationship. There are perhaps two diseased individuals in a relationship that each need healing, but the relationship is a perfect creation that will reflect for each of them exactly what it is that they need to work through. And so through interaction in our relationships, we're going to draw the people that are going to show us what it is that we most need to heal. And when we do that work, everything changes. And I think what we'll do is we'll pick up with the commitment again on Monday, and we'll talk about it a little bit more. But what I'd like to do at this point is open the space for anybody in the phone queue with a hand up, or anybody in the chat room who has a thought for us. Machini, do we have anything happening there?
Well, we actually have Bob in Australia and Tipia in Thailand. So our chat room
covers hey there.
Large space.
Yes.
We have no hands up. So we have 33 minutes. If someone presses one, we have plenty of time.
We need to send Peter a message in Sweden to get him on, and boy, that'll really spread the field, you know, around the earth. And maybe there are people in other countries that we don't hear from. You know, if you're out there, drop us a note. Let us know where you're from. I know that back a couple of years ago, we were doing a show, and Gene got an email from a fellow in Holland. And he said, you know, I found your book online. I downloaded it free. I did these worksheets. It changed my life. And so here. And he had actually translated the book into Dutch and sent us the whole book translated. So it's now, you know, another one of the translations. It's on the website free. So you can download the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, in English, Russian, German, Spanish, Swedish, Farsi. Pardon me, not Swedish. We've got it translated into Swedish, but the publisher wouldn't let us put it online. And Dutch as well. So it's pretty cool to see how people have responded and supported us in bringing these tools forward on a global scale. If you happen to speak a language that, you know, we don't have translated, the book translated in, we would love your support in translating it and making it available. So if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, we've got a half an hour to chat. Our calling number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1, we'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? Ginny, you started to say something, sweetie?
I was just going to say, and out of all of the translations, we have so many things translated in Spanish that we actually have a whole, there's a link up at the top that says Spanish, and if you click it, it has, you know, the book, it has the commitments, it has worksheets. There's just lots of things all in Spanish. So that's, you know, we had so many that we actually gave it its own page. And in the book, we've got a portion in Thai. I think Tippy is going to be doing some translating for us, but we only have the 7-step and the 12-step wake-up sheets and then an article on Rockman Kubalov that are in Thai. So the whole book has not been translated there. We do have Dutch, English, Farsi, French, German, Russian, Spanish. So, and all of those are on the website. And then, like Michael said, we have the Swedish, but it's not, it's only in hard copy. So we have two hands up.
Awesome. Let's say hello.
All right. The first one is Julie 541. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Julie from Ashland, Oregon.
Welcome,
Hi.
Young lady.
Hey, I'm doing my work a little here, and something came up that I think I wasn't sitting down with pen and paper, and it slipped away. So I know there's something really just under a top layer ready to come forth. But what I am aware of right now is an anger that I have towards myself. And when you were reading the commitment to you, I know there's also a commitment to myself, so I'm going to look that up and read it. But it has to
Excuse
do
me,
with
Julie,
how...
Julie, I lost my connection there for a second. Julie, could you just start the conversation over? I apologize. I dropped out and I had to dial back in.
Oh, sure. And sometimes my microphone, I'd let it drop and talk away from it. So anyway, I hear you. Okay, well, I'm just looking at how I've betrayed my commitment to myself a lot over and over again, and I'm kind of back in that spot now. And the anger that I also have towards myself rather than towards others. So anger is up, and because it's inside me. And the thing that it looks like in my life, the perceptual reality is that I'm regretting that I chose to trust science and the medical community and have an eye operation that I didn't really need because I knew better than to try to fix something outside of myself. I knew that I could heal the thing in my eyesight by doing my work. You know, I trust that, okay? But it seemed like it would take a long time and blah, blah, blah. So I took the shortcut, and I'm experiencing that this eyesight promise of the procedure is not exactly perfectly remedied. And I'm in the belief responsibility sort of kind of space of knowing that I'm the one that still has to heal my eyes, you know? I mean, so now I've kind of complicated this situation because I've had a procedure. And now I know I'm blaming, too, and I'm in denial, and there's all those things. So I just feel like, and I said before you got cut off, that I'm touching on a root. I've been doing my mind shifter, but it slipped away because I wasn't doing it with paper at the time this one started to come up. So I know something's just underneath the surface, just in time for the breathing tomorrow, and I'll be doing some written work today and tomorrow, or tonight, today, towards that. So just, I guess, letting you know. Oh, and I mentioned the commitment to myself. I need to read that. Yeah.
Right. So it sounds like perhaps some work around betrayal by authority, and that probably goes back to power person stuff with mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
Might be appropriate to do in that regard. And,
yeah.
You know, I know that you've done some work with Magda, and I actually talked to Magda this morning, and she shared on the show a while back how she was working on deserving, and that she'd had a really mm-hmm. huge opening in that regard and was finding a major shift in her life because she had been going for so long in this belief that she didn't deserve the quote-unquote good things to happen.
Well,
and
mm-hmm.
so you might, I know you've done some work with her, so I bring that up for two reasons. One, to say that it sounds like very likely some of that you're doing is about what you think you deserve. You're getting what you think you deserve,
mm-hmm.
and you might want to clean some of that up, and you might have a conversation. As I say, I know you've done some work with her over the years. You've been supportive with each other and know each other, and you might have a conversation and get some support from her on how and what she's been working on and what's open for her to come to that whole new level. Because she said it's like her whole life has just made a shift around that issue.
Oh, good.
Our mm-hmm. other caller is Magda, so I'm going to turn her microphone on as well.
How
oh, what a coincidence.
Yep.
Oh, how funny.
Speak of angels and angels appear. Hey, Magda.
Hi, everyone. Do we have a good enough connection that you can understand me?
Pretty
You're loud and clear.
Okay, because this phone is on its last legs. I thought
it's a little fuzzy sounding, like last
yeah.
legs, but yeah. Just talk slowly. We'll get it.
Okay, good. Right. Yeah, it's so good to hear from you, Julie, and I would be delighted to talk with you anytime that you want. We'll make arrangements. Yeah, I was actually calling. You mentioned the responsibility communication, and I was calling because of that way back several months ago when we did the online class of healing through relationships, which was a really
right.
dandy, wonderful class.
In the codependence intensive.
Yeah, right, intensive. It was intense. And then when we got to the responsibility communication part of it, Chuck and I did volunteer to do that together in, with the community helping and with you helping us to get through it. And one of the recommendations that came from somebody, I don't know who it was, I don't remember, was that we could consider the commitment each morning together. And we have been doing that every morning since. I think we've missed 3 mornings out of all those months. And sometimes we read it together. We take turns with the sentences. Sometimes we read it, the whole thing together. Sometimes one of us will read it to the other. It has made quite a difference in our relationship. It's just made everything sweeter, smoother.
That's awesome.
And yeah, and it's a great tool if utilized, just like all the other tools, right, Julie? So,
yes.
One of the things that I've noticed is really helpful is that when something does come up between us and there's a behavior involved that is less than love, if we can actually grab the part of the commitment that addresses that and just say that sentence, it really makes a difference. It brings us back to solving and healing rather than going forward in anger or resentment, whatever happens to be going on. So I just wanted to share that with y'all, and there you are. And then Julie came on.
How perfect. How perfect. And, yeah, that's, you know, it's a matter of, if you're going to do a new personal code, you've got to keep the brain cells. You realize that personal comes from 1,000 generations. You know, you go back into the scriptures and they talk about look to the lives of the fathers. And, of course, it wouldn't be limited to males, fathers and mothers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. Those personal codes mm-hmm. are so deeply embedded right genetically. And, yeah, it's going to take time to dig that up, clean it up, forgive it, and instill a new personal code. So keeping it in front of you keeps those brain cells firing, and you're more likely to function out of the brain cells that are firing the strongest than the weaker old patterns as you forgive the old and reinforce the new, then a personal code
right.
gradually shifts. And so
that's a good point to remember, that the strength of whatever it is we're wanting to change, it won't happen automatically, only when what the new change is stronger.
Takes effort.
So and that's what practicing does. Very cool. Very good.
That's awesome.
I have something that I'm getting clear on real quickly here, if I may. I have something coming up that's having to do with, like, a possible illness that I had in a previous life, and I'm not trying to make it all sound fluffy and removed from me now. It's now energy of feeling unable to communicate clearly for myself. And in the past energy is from generational, something to do with, I've had two kinds. One of being abandoned because I had some disease like leprosy, or I was left to die or something like that. And then another one is this inability to communicate was like an autistic life or a, what do they call it, Asperger's, a touch of that. And I feel like it's like coming
right.
up for me as
a reality experience, it's harder for me now to communicate. And so there's mostly I'm blocking truth, you know, and that's my articulation is not wanting to tell the truth about something. So that's the hint I have about what's coming up. Ready for the workshop tomorrow, and I'm going to do some writing today.
Powerful. So how about a mind shifter? Let's add a mind shifter
okay.
here, a different one.
Okay, great.
Telling the truth quickly heals all abandonment issues for me. And supports closeness in my relationships. Good breath. That's the one.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, that was all I had to say. It's just that breath is that's what we want. That's where the energy starts to move.
Yeah.
So that'll be a perfect one for you to write between now and tomorrow, the Still Point Breathing Workshop tomorrow. That'll be perfect.
You know, I'm interested that you used the word quickly, telling the truth quickly, like so I can tell that so that I guess don't layer lies over it. But I wanted to say that yesterday when I shared that I got the message to remember that when someone's in pain, they're asking for love, and I could also see that I was in pain and asking for love, and so I did that. I gave love. I became a space of love again and communicated from there, and because I've practiced this, I always trust and open to what I'm going to be shown rather than trying to figure it out. I set that figuring out aside, and I'm realizing yesterday I was realizing that actually the words came in our conversation in that space of love, more so than I felt able to communicate before. Like things were open and flowing and easier for me to communicate, and I said things in ways that I'd never said before, or, you know, just it was there. It was just there. And it's so beautiful to trust that and allow it and to know that the truth, now I'm integrating the truth, it always allows the highest and best.
And notice the power.
Like. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, notice the power of speaking through, like you recognize you're in a healing crisis, something like Asperger's or autism is what the energy is moving through you. And bringing the commitment forward and speaking with clarity from that is it's what blows off, so to speak, cracks up the healing crisis energy, the deficient energy, helps to break that up so I can get free of its grip and bring the true power through of being. And, you know, if you had a mind that seemed to be so distorted by something like Asperger's or autism, and that being behind that mind could be connected to deeply enough by the presence of love. You know, the last couple of days we've been talking about touching the hem of his garment. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. To strengthen that presence of being to come through, that's what's going to crack that whole facade. And, you know, whatever's stored in carbon-based memory from the past is going to begin to dissolve, to be forgiven in that power coming through. And I think that was an important part of Yeshua's work with healing with people, is they saw themselves as ABC. He saw them as the truth and was able to pull the truth of who they were in through whatever, you know, they saw themselves as, and just crack and dissolve that facade that created, you know, the ABC disease or the XYZ disease or whatever was going on. And that's where the diseases disappeared. And you'll notice repeatedly, he hands the power back to the person who did the piece of work, rather than I performed a miracle for you, which is what, you know, lots of churchianity wants to do. They were all his miracles. If you listen to him, he doesn't say that. He says, your work, you were the one who were ready to come through. And you know, I mean, I almost like imagine there's a glass false image of who we are. And when another person can be totally in and connected to that space of love and reach through that glass facade, taking the hand of that being called love and drawing them in, it's like you can almost imagine that whole facade just shatters. It's gone.
Yeah.
And that's the self that Yeshua spoke about. In order for you to live, you true being, you non-being, that glass facade, have to die. It has to be shattered. It has to be forgiven. It has to be removed. And it's a big piece of work, because if we really believe, and most people do really believe, well, I do deserve to be abused. I do deserve this. I do deserve it. That's the glass facade. That's what has to be cracked for the truth to come through.
Wow. And the other day when I did start picking up on my tendency or that I was carrying some of this Asperger type of, you know, dis-ease, I was also seeing from and what you're saying. I mean, if I start doing work on that issue, it resonates for everybody. I mean, it's I'm an avenue for that. You know, instead of overly identifying with it and figuring
right.
it out in my generations, you know,
yep.
and then having to remember the incidents, you know, it's just, it's going to unlock. That's all. Yeah.
Well, and go back to the codependence intensive. And remember when we talked about the pseudo solution to the non-being mind? And the number one pseudo solution across the board is, if I could just figure this out. And you can't figure it out. But you can bring forward, through the use of the tools, you can weaken the glass facade, and you can strengthen the state of being so that the dissolution of that facade becomes easier and easier.
Yes. Because I can see it. I can see, then my vision will clear up. Everything related to not seeing it will clear up.
Yes. And, you know, we've been given a world where there's certain tools available. And I've had people that in the past have said, you know, that there's some sort of a disease process. And they're like, but I know I can heal it. I know I can heal it. And, you know, it's maybe something with some serious symptoms attached. And say, well, I realize, yes, you could heal it. I don't know how many years it's going to take. Is it really worth it when you could just walk into a sincere professional's office who can support you in making a change? Doesn't mean you have to stop doing your work around it, but to really, you know, I use an example of, there's I'm thirsty, and there's a glass over there and a pitcher of water. And I sit here and I go, now I know the masters have told me that I could pick that pitcher up with my mind and pour the water into the glass and I could drink it and I could just lay here and have that happen. And, you know, I believe that's possible. But the fact is we're given a set of legs to get up and walk over, pour a glass of water and drink it. So sometimes taking the support, I've suggested to people, you know, that you take the support of something like, you know, in the case of your eyes, perhaps a surgery that can help to enhance your life in a way that, well, yeah, you probably could do it, but, you know, it might be 10, 20, 30, 40 years. Sometimes reaching a hand out for support is more prudent, I think.
Yeah, I'll incorporate it. It's all part of one set of eyes. So,
yeah. And letting go of that distrust of authority is probably another, from what you were saying, listening to your words, is probably another big piece in the puzzle.
Yeah, and I was just tuning into the fear around the truth and my fear of trusting the authority. It's the fear that I'm weak and I won't be able to handle it and they're going to get me and all that. So my worksheet's already happening now again. Thanks. This is powerful for me. Yeah.
Well, one more mind shifter.
Okay. I'm ready.
The authorities in my life
mm-hmm.
have always been and always will be, have always been and always will be impeccably mm-hmm. trustworthy.
Oh.
So that'll give you a chance to look at all the times. Say again?
That got complicated immediately. My mind said, I got to figure out how to be impeccable with this stuff now, as if it's not already hard enough.
So that's the first thing that goes on the right side of the page. Right. Write that down. This is the impact
okay.
of the mind shifter. Notice it's showing you that content in your mind, and that's the idea, is to record it so you get a clear picture of what it is you need to work through.
What did I say? My mind has to get really good at being impeccable. Oh, really good at being impeccable.
And this will probably be a good conversation if you go back and listen to.
Yes. Okay.
Breathing with you, young lady.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Magda. I feel your love and support, and I also feel the resonance of the contentment with which you're receiving results in your work. I appreciate that, too. Thank you. Awesome.
Well, all right. Well, any other thoughts?
Two people. Go ahead.
Any other Michael? Thoughts for you, Julie?
Oh, I muted her. Hold on, I'll unmute.
Oh, okay. You're complete.
I'm good. I'm complete.
Okay. Awesome. Well, go ahead, Jeannie.
Okay, we have two people in the chat room. One is Kathy from Florida, and she's actually leaving tomorrow to go to Columbia. She has a double tooth abscess, and this just seems to be a recurring thing for her, and then having to go back home to Columbia to get it worked on. And she wondered if you had a mind shifter for her.
Hmm. How about, can you tell us a little bit more about what's happening in your world?
So she's in the chat room, so I have to wait for her to type.
Yeah, sure.
I know it's happened several times for her that she'll have an abscess tooth and she has to go down to Columbia and have it.
Yeah, it's a long way to go to get it taken care of.
Yeah. And this time she's got a double abscess.
Ouch.
So she's not written anything yet.
Well, I'll just throw out while we're waiting for a response, if there's going to be one, that oftentimes teeth have to do with not speaking. And so you might look at whether there are issues where you haven't spoken up or haven't been true to your word or honest with yourself or your intentions. Perhaps that would be useful to look at. And so a good mind shifter might be, it's safe in healing for me to speak my truth It's safe and healing for me to speak my truth, and I always gain approval for doing that.
She just wrote back and says, I'm not sure, but it was said that one of the roots of the canals was not filled. I guess, had a root canal and it wasn't filled totally, and that could be the cause for having the other abscesses. And Kathy,
holding,
I'll have that mind shifter in the notes. Yeah. And then we have another question in the chat room, and it is from Tipia. And she says she's presented her first presentation. And
congratulations, Tipia.
Yeah, and she's cleared up some issues at work with her boss. And she has a friend who was at the presentation, and her friend is very depressed. And she wanted to know, how can she use the worksheet with this friend to help her get over her depression? And then she has another question, and she wants a mind shifter as well.
Okay. Well, you know, for someone who's in depression, depression is simply usually anger thoughts turned inward. And underneath the anger, there's always some pain. And so if your friend is willing to do the work of uncovering what's under the surface, is willing to do the work of forgiving the anger and letting themselves confront directly the pain. You know, anger is an anesthetic. It's a drug. So someone who has internal pain that drugs themselves is very similar to the alcoholic that takes a fifth of scotch. Well, hey, if I have a fifth of scotch in my body, I'm feeling no pain. If I just rage a little bit, I don't feel any pain. But the anger turned inward turns into depression. And so the willingness to work through the anger and start to look at what are the thought disorders that need to be removed to eradicate the depression. That would be the direction to go with that. And, you know, you're going to be at the Still Point Breathing Workshop tomorrow. Perhaps your friend might want to be part of that workshop. I don't know. The breath is always a big key in peeling off those layers of pain and depression. So that would be a starting point. You know, just that you're going to have to just buckle down and do the work.
Okay, and her next thing is she says she really wants to do more around the purpose of being a coach or a consultant rather than her director work that she's doing for a living. And
right.
She would like a mind shifter around that. A couple things that I thought of as soon as she wrote that was, one, I don't know about in Thailand, but here you have to watch calling yourself a coach or a consultant unless you have a license for that. But then, you know, you may have to continue doing your director work until you can get established enough to do the coaching or consulting. But she said she'd like a mind shifter around that to make her clearer on her purpose.
Well, my thought would be
the purpose worksheet too.
Yeah, we're down to last minute and a half, so we may have to take this up on Monday. But Tipia, I would suggest that you do the purpose exercise. If you go to the website and search for purpose worksheet and do that purpose worksheet, we do have a video called Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment. But the worksheet itself is pretty self-explanatory. If you take that and put it to work and then get clear on, you know, really clear on what your purpose is, then commitment, make a deep commitment to that, and then all the blocks that would inhibit you from doing that are going to start to surface, and that's where your forgiveness work will come in. So that would be a good starting point. And a mind shifter. I think we need to have a little more conversation, so maybe on Monday we can do that. But that'll be a good starting point, I think, if you take the purpose worksheet from the website, and or Jeannie will probably email one to you if she hasn't already, knowing Jeannie. And in the meantime, everybody, thank you for all the conversation. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Nice work, Julie.
I choose to live more consciously.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.